woman continued in this mature world, a householder's life brings all kinds of happiness in religion, economic development, sense gratification, and the beginning of children, sons, and grandsons. After that, one may desire liberation, as well as material reputation. The householder can appreciate the results of sacrifices, which enable him to gain promotion to superior planetary systems. All this material happiness is practically unknown to the transcendentalists. They cannot even imagine such happiness. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami 35. According to the Vedic instructions, there are two paths for human activities. One is called Pravritti Marg, and the other is called Nivritti Marg. The basic principle for either of these paths is religious life. In animal life, there is only Pravritti Marg. Pravritti Marg means sense enjoyment, and Nivritti Marg means spiritual advancement. In the life of animals and demons, there is no conception of Nivritti Marg, nor is there any actual conception of Pravritti Marg. Pravritti Marg maintains that even though one has the propensity for sense gratification, he can gratify his senses according to the directions of the Vedic injunctions. For example, everyone has the propensity for sex life, but in demoniac civilization, sex is enjoyed without restriction. According to Vedic culture, sex is enjoyed under Vedic instructions. Thus, the Vedas give direction to civilized human beings to enable them to satisfy their propensities for sense gratification. Sri Sri Radha Madan Mohan Ki Jai. In the Nivritti Marg, however, on the path of transcendental realization, sex is completely forbidden. The social orders are divided into four parts: brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. And only in the householder life can the Pravritti Marg be encouraged or accepted according to Vedic instructions. In the orders of brahmacharya, vanaprastha, and sannyas, there are no facilities for sex. In this verse, the woman is advocating Pravritti Marg only and is discouraging the path of Nivritti Marg. She clearly says that the yatis, the transcendentalists who are concerned only with spiritual life, kaivalya, cannot imagine the happiness of Pravritti Marg. In other words, the man who follows the Vedic principles enjoys the materialistic way of life, not only by becoming happy in this life, but also in the next life, by being promoted to the heavenly planets. In this life, such a person gets all kinds of material opulences, such as sons and grandsons, because he is always engaged in various religious functions. The material distresses are birth, old age, disease, and death. But those who are interested in Pravritti Marg hold various religious functions at the time of birth, old age, disease, and death. Without caring for the distresses of birth, old age, disease, and death, they are addicted to performing the special functions according to the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Factually, however, Pravritti Marg is based on sex life. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.45, Yan maitanadi grihamedi sukham hitocham. A householder who is too much addicted to Pravritti Marg is actually called a grihamedhi, not a grihastha. Although the grihastha desires sense gratification, he acts according to Vedic instructions. The grihamedhi, however, who is interested only in sense gratification, does not follow any Vedic instructions. Bookmark that sentence. I'll read it again. The grihamedhi, however, who is interested only in sense gratification, does not follow any Vedic instructions. The grihamedhi engages himself as an advocate of sex life, and also allows his sons and daughters to engage in sex and to be deprived of, any glorious end in life. A grihastha enjoys sex in this life. Enjoys sex life in this life as well as in the next. But a grihameti does not know what the next life is about, because he is simply interested in sex in this life. On the whole, when one is too much inclined toward sex, he does not care for the transcendental spiritual life. In this age of Kali, especially, no one is interested in spiritual advancement. Even though it is sometimes found that one may be interested in spiritual advancement, he is most likely to accept a bogus method of spiritual life, being misguided by so many pretenders. Om Jnanatimarantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lankayate Girim Yat Kripatam Aham Vande Paramahamsa Madhavam. Now, Srila Prabhupada has described elaborately in 2.5 paragraphs that the pravritti marg means sense gratification performed according to the injunctions of the Vedic literatures, and nivritti marg means pursuance of purely spiritual life. Srila Prabhupada also emphasizes that of the four orders in the system of dharma, well, first of all, there is no system other than dharma that we should note here. In the third sentence of the first paragraph of this purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, "The basic principle for either of these paths is religious life." Either of these paths means either the pravritti marg or the nivritti marg. And Srila Prabhupada says, the basic principle in either one is religious life. In other words, dharma. So if you're interested in sense gratification on the pravritti marg, then your means is dharma. And if you're interested in liberation on the nivritti marg, then your means is dharma. There's no such thing as pious life in this world that doesn't involve dharma. Therefore, Krishna says, Yesham tvantagatam papam jananam punya karnamanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhante mandrudha vrataha. In chapter 7 of the Bhagavad Gita, text number 28, he says that those who are engaged in dharma, that is to say in punya karma, there's no difference. The word dharma and the word karma, they're synonymous. There's no distinction between them. They mean the same thing. So we therefore have karma yoga, but there's no such thing as vikarma yoga. In the modern day and age, because modern society places every discouragement on the principle of dharma, therefore, people are socialized with the understanding that life is meant for limitless sense gratification. One makes one's own choices, and the purpose of one's choices is, of course, to enjoy the body and the mind. So in that social milieu, it's actually impossible to get any accurate concept of what dharma means. Here in the word-for-word synonyms, Srila Prabhupada has translated accurately the word dharma as religious ritual. Is there more to it than that? Have we heard any other definition of dharma?
Duty.
Duty is another one. What else?
A natural
characteristic. This is the scientific or the philosophical definition of the same term. In the Vedic literature, we have only one word for an arena of concepts that is expressed in English by so many different words. Therefore, sometimes we see that it's translated inconsistently. Sometimes it's translated as the innate property of a thing. The dharma of fire is heat and light, for example. The dharma of sugar is sweetness. The dharma of water is to find its own level, etc., etc. Sometimes we find it as a social duty, sometimes we find it as a kind of a faith, we find it as a civic obligation of whatever sort, we find it as filial piety, we find it as shastric injunctions for the purpose of elevation through ritual, so many different definitions, but all of them mean the same thing. They all mean dharma. So the real problem is that in the English language, we don't have a single word that subsumes all these different meanings. And there's a reason for that. Why is it that there's no word for all these concepts? There's no single word in English to express all these, because there's no such concept that would require that word. Now, when we approach instructions like today's purport, coming from that socialization wherein sense gratification is presumed at the subconscious level to be the goal of life, subconscious level means we're functioning on the basis of samskaras more than on the basis of any conscious decision most of the time. So when we've become so conditioned and so programmed that we don't even think about what we're doing and don't question what we're given to deal with in life, then it's very difficult for us to actually understand purports like this one, because we have no concept of dharma with which to reject it. In the Nivritti Marg, the practices, I should say, of dharma, defined as religious ritual, as Prabhupada has done here, that's by and large downplayed. But we cannot make the mistake of misunderstanding the term wholesale, and therefore ignoring the fact that dharma is a scientific phenomenon, and it does always apply in any circumstance, anywhere, anytime. It's the intrinsic property of everything that we can define. Everything has its intrinsic property, including ourselves and our personality types and our conditioning and our bodies and our societies and our languages and the way that we eat, sleep, mate, and defend, the way that we do everything and what everything is in this world and in the next world. Every dharma has everything that we can define as something discrete has its dharma. So that's important to understand, because we will not be able to understand this purport until we do. Now, I pointed out here that of these two paths, the Pravritti Marg and the Nivritti Marg, the basic principle for either one of them is dharma. Then Prabhupada says, in animal life there's only Pravritti Marg. Then, more significantly than that, he says, in the life of animals and demons, which should give us a hint that there's not really any difference between them. In the life of animals and demons, there is no conception of Nivritti Marg, nor is there any actual conception of Pravritti Marg. So the demons, they only know, and the animals, they only know the Pravritti Marg, but they really don't know the Pravritti Marg. This is the thing. Similarly, we know dharma, but we don't know dharma, because we're coming from that background. Almost everyone, it's safe to assume that almost everyone in modern society is either an animal or a demon, I'm sorry to say. Now, therefore, I told you to bookmark this sentence when Prabhupada says here later on in the purport, the Grihamethi, who is interested only in sense gratification, does not follow any Vedic instruction. Well, Prabhupada has been discussing how the Grihamethi is one who is only accepting religious rituals for the purpose of elevation. This whole verse is aimed at the Grihamethi, and yet Prabhupada says that he doesn't follow any kind of Vedic instruction. So what does that mean? How are we just, it sounds like a contradiction, doesn't it? It seems that way. But the fact is that just as Dharma has many terms, Prabhupada does not use the term grihamethi consistently, entirely. So sometimes it means a pious grihastha, sometimes it means a sinful grihamethi, somebody who is not really, doesn't understand or doesn't follow the Vedic injunctions as well. Either way, because the basic principle is sex life, therefore the whole thing is considered to be grihamethi, even if someone is a very pious. Factually, however, this is the first sentence of the last paragraph. Factually, however, pravriti marg is based on sex life. A householder is too much addicted to pravriti marg is actually called a grihamethi, not a grihastha. So in this purport, at least, Prabhupada is defining the grihastha as someone who is on the nirvriti marg, someone for whom spiritual life is more important than material life. How do we know where we're going in our next life? If we were to die in 10 minutes, where would each of us be going? How do we gauge that sort of thing?
We know exactly by where we are. Our consciousness right now, that is to say, our present consciousness will determine where we will be.
Yeah, not only do we know by our present consciousness, but we also maybe know by our present subconscious. Yes. And that's the importance, because when we become so challenged, think about death for a minute, think even about old age, for those who are approaching it, which means all of us. We're going to find out. Old age is not for sissies. Everything is challenged. Our intelligence is challenged. Our body is challenged. Our emotions are challenged. How? What happens when they take away your car keys, your children? You can't drive anymore. That means that's a very significant milestone in the general process of loss of independence that old age entails. I had to do this with my mother, that's how come I know. And it entails all sorts of psychological challenges and emotional reactions. We're not thinking about this most of the time. But we're going to see, this is coming. It's on its way already. Prarabdha karma means it's going to play itself out. No matter what you do in this life, it's going to happen. You cannot avoid it. Of course, unless our prarabdha karma has it that we don't even reach old age, and that's another option. People are killed all the time, unpredictably. So anyway, but old age, it entails this whole disintegration of our psychophysical assets and facilities and everything that we may be identified with, everything we think we are, everything that we assume travels with us from one body to the next. That's another thing, isn't it? Because we think we've understood we're not our bodies. We assume that the current amount of virtue that I've been given as a result of my prarabdha karma, the current amount of intelligence or even awareness, consciousness, that's called jnana, what to speak of the assets that I may have in the physical world. We assume that these are all going to continue with me forever and ever and ever, but they don't. You may lose your sanity. What does that feel like? How do you process it? You may lose your mobility. You may lose all of your limbs. What do you do? You may lose all your friends. You can have everything in life, all the money in the world you want, but you've got no political support. How does that feel? Or you can have every kind of prestige and every kind of respect and every kind of all friends in the world, every so many loving relatives, and good health, and everything's fine, but no money at all. It's not easy. These things are all malleable. They're all... I mean, none of them is guaranteed, that's the point. At any minute, anything can be removed from the picture, and that causes us severe problems because we are accustomed to expect them. We depend on the ordinary course of activities, as Krishna puts it. elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita. And to be detached means to be freed from that expectation. It's not easy to anticipate everything that can go wrong. All the things that can kill you are all the things that would make you want to die. And yet people have to undergo this process regularly. So the person on the Nivritti mark, he's solidly fixed in this intelligence, or she's solidly fixed in this intelligence, and that is one of the primary motivators for the person to adopt that path of transcendentalism. Here the word is used, kevalina. Kevalina means the kevalis, the persons who are on the path of exclusive dedication. That means either the Advaitins or the transcendentalists in general, but certainly not those who are dedicated to multiplicity. Because what is the nature of material existence is fantastic complexity, almost inconceivable multiplicity, variegatedness. It's so sophisticatedly complicated, this material creation and our entanglement within it, that Krishna compares it to an infinite, virtually infinite banyan tree. Cannot figure out where the beginning or where the end of it is. This is the realm of dharma. The realm of dharma is this overwhelming complexity in which it's very, very, very difficult to figure out what's going on at any given time, place, and circumstance. Therefore, the single most voluminous body of knowledge that exists in the Sanskrit language is the Dharma Shastra, because it attempts to take the abstract principles of spiritual life and explicate or explain or clarify, specify what is the progressive path in that specific time, place, and circumstance. In other words, it has to limit its purview to a given time, a given place, and a given circumstance. That's why we have so many shastras written over so much time and by so many different authors in so many languages even. Now, in the modern day and age, we have GBC law, which has taken up this traditional function, but it's not explicitly presented as coming from God or even being divinely inspired. And that removes, most likely, for the majority of people who are religious in society, the impetus to take it very seriously. And therefore we find that even the persons who have written these laws don't follow them as well. So Dharma Shastra is a different thing, and Dharma is what we're talking about here. Of course, this woman she's here to enliven Puranjan Maharaj with sense gratification, so it's not really her purpose to point towards the Nivritti Mark, as Prabhupada's report is telling us. She's only delineating the Pravritti Mark, or at least she's only encouraging the Pravritti Mark. As far as she's concerned, the transcendentalists can't even imagine all the nectar, the word is used here, amritam, which exists for the person who takes his pleasure in praja. Continuation of the species and whatever it takes to affect that. So, but the significant thing I would say here in our given time, place, and circumstance is the word dharma, which is the first word of the verse. It's being used here in a specific sense as a religious ritual, according to Srila Prabhupada, but we should not forget that it has much, much wider application, and that whenever we see the word dharma, it's usually not specified as to which of the meanings is intended, because simultaneously both of them are intended. The scientific or metaphysical definition, as well as the ritualistic or shastraic injunction sort of meaning of it as well. They're both meant at the same time. And that's important because everything has its dharma, and unless everything is in harmony in this world of sense gratification with its own dharma, it creates reactions that cause us to suffer in so many ways, and even which militate against us practicing spiritual life in an effective way. I mentioned already in chapter 7, text 28, That's what Krishna's point is. Those who are engaging in my service with firm determination, those who can maintain and sustain a mature commitment to the principle, even what to speak of the practice of pure devotional service, those are the people who are fixed in piety. And it's interesting to note the root of the word here, dhri. Dhri in Sanskrit means to sustain something. That which sustains us, that is dharma. And if it does not sustain you, then it's not dharma. Dhri means to bear, just like we have the word dhara, dharana, giridharana, just like Krishna sustained or he held up the hill. At the same time, dharma is something that you uphold. You have to uphold it. We actually uphold the universe, believe it or not. And each of us, through this great cosmic symbiosis called Varnashram Dharma, we play our part in upholding the universe. And if we don't play our part, if we don't uphold our own swadharma, then we actually cause cosmic repercussions. We make it difficult. The nature of Varnashram is nothing if not symbiotic. Unless everybody does it, nobody can do it. Therefore, it's so important to understand what does this word mean. Unless we have the substrate of a mature understanding of what dharma means to begin with, then there's no question of application of its principles. Because you don't know its principles. We were talking about this last night. Any abhidheya or application of Krishna consciousness is predicated on sambandhagyan, an accurate understanding of what the relations are. And furthermore, prayojan, what the goal is. Sometimes, therefore, we see devotees become confused because in some places in Srila Prabhupada's books, it seems as if Varnashram is discouraged or even rejected. For example, in the Ramananda Samvad, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his discussion with Ramananda Rai, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected Ramananda Rai's presentation of Varnashram as the ultimate goal in life. He said it was external. How do we rationalize that in light of what I'm saying? It is external in one of its manifestations. For those who are on the pravritti marg, the pravritti marg is definitely external. What about for those who are on the nivritti marg? For them, is Varnashram important? In the Vishnu Purana, Sagar Maharaj asks Arjuna Muni, how do ordinary people take to pure devotional service? This is a question that's very much relevant to us, isn't it? We're interested in spreading Krishna consciousness. I hope. So he asked him this question. Now he was a responsible king thinking of the spiritual welfare of his society, of his praja, his citizens. He wasn't just concerned about their pravritti mark, he was also concerned about the nivritti mark. And he was asking, how do we encourage people or bring them to the point of accepting pure Krishna consciousness? He asked this question directly. Ardha Muni, by way of answering this question in a long, long-winded way, I mean, not long-winded, but throughout many passages of this section of the Vishnu Purana, he basically gives this answer that Srila Prabhupada also quotes throughout his books in a famous verse, well-known verse. Varnashrama charavata purushena parapaman Vishnurarabhite pungsam nanyatatosh karanam. That means that Lord Vishnu is pleased by performance of Varnashram Dharma, and for the ordinary person, there's no other way to please him. There's no other way to approach him. The access point into the Nivritti Marg is the Pravritti Marg. Therefore, we find, if we study these things, that in historical tradition, that's called aitihya. It's given as one of four pramans by Lord Krishna in the 11th canto. We know about three pramans, don't we? That's anuman, pratyaksha, and shabda. Sense perception, inference, and hearing from authoritative assertion. But Krishna mentions a fourth praman, in the 11th canto. Aitihya means historical precedent, tradition. Why? Because in the realm of dharma in particular, that is the only means to understand how it applies in a given time, place, and circumstance. We don't have explicit references, especially in the Nivruttimarga literature. But I'm getting off the point. So Ardava Muni answers with this verse from Vishnu Purana, and he explains at great length, just as the Srimad Bhagavatam, for that matter, does. If it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, then how can it be external? How can Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say that it's external if it's in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is meant for those who are non-envious, Paramahamsas, and, to say the least, transcendentalists? This is a problem. We need to process it. Varnashram, our most recent acharyas, Bhaktivinod Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and our own Srila Prabhupada, for the last century or more than the last century, our acharyas have emphasized that Varnashram has two aspects. There is a pravritti marga aspect, which is called Asuri Varnashram. That's what they call it. And there's the Nivritti marga manifestation, which they call Daivi Varnashram Dharma. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejects the Varnashram Dharma that was proposed by Ramanand Rao, he's rejecting the Asuri Varnashram, that is to say, the ordinary social mores and even the principle of mundane Pravritti Marga without Krishna, without God. But in our line, Srila Prabhupada said in one of his latest instructions, the remaining 50% of my mission is Varnashram Dharma. And we do in fact find throughout Srila Prabhupada's books that he is very much encouraging it at the same time that he seems to be discouraging it. So he's encouraging this within ISKCON, this Daivi Varnashram Dharma, special variety which is tailor-made to facilitate Krishna consciousness. And my godbrother Sureshwar Prabhu, who wrote this book, who compiled a book of quotes on the topic of Varnashram from Srila Prabhupada, he told me that when we went into this project, he and Hare Krishna Dasi, he said, we were assuming that this Varnashram was something that Prabhupada intended us to present to the public as a means of gradually approaching Krishna consciousness. And that's true. We've already described on the basis of Vishnu Purana how that's so. But he said, what we found out is that almost all of Prabhupada's instructions were directed squarely at the initiated membership of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It was meant for the devotees themselves. And Burke Roquefort, another sociologist, he did some studies of ISKCON in the 1980s and 90s. He came up with some figures about this. He figured out that Srila Prabhupada gave roughly 80% of his instructions on the topic of Varnashram within the last 3 years that he was with us. So he evidently was seeing more and more and more of a need for this in his own society. Beginning from around the time New Dwarka was started in the early 1970s, Srila Prabhupada adopted an increasingly vidhi-oriented social infrastructure within the society. Vidhi means injunctions, based on standards, rules, regulations, objective practices that everyone is obliged to follow. That follows in the spirit of this increasing emphasis on Varnashram that we see in his instructions in his later years. It is as if he saw, and in fact he himself did say explicitly, they're falling down. These disciples, why they're falling down? Because they don't have this. They don't have a concept of Dharma, what to speak of, it's any sense of how to therefore practice it. Even in India nowadays, I should say especially in India nowadays, it's being slaughtered, wiped out as fast as possible. And that's a big loss, because it takes one generation of neglect to wipe out thousands of years of cumulative wisdom and culture and spiritual advancement the kinds of social standards that only the society can transmit. How do you play mridanga? Can you learn it exclusively from a book? No, somebody has to sit down with you and show you what to do. The same thing is true of deity worship. The same thing is true of almost anything if you think about it. So the society is the conduit for the transmission of dharma. And therefore, if you wipe out its social manifestation, the only place where it was left is India, then it's a very sorry situation. Anyway, these are some things that we can think of based on this verse. I'm not really stressing interest in Pravati Marg in the same spirit that this Wum Puranjani is stressing, but in the sense, in the transcendental sense, applicable to the Nivritti Marg of living a dharmic existence in order to facilitate Krishna consciousness, exclusively to facilitate Krishna consciousness. Here's where we have to be careful of the Yukta Vairagya principle, because it is one of the most abused in our society. Just about any kind of sense gratification and even sinful activity goes on the name of and rubric of Yukta Vairagya. We've got to be careful of that. But one thing is for sure, and that is that if Srila Prabhupada gave us a very explicit and repeated and a very pointed instruction to establish Varnashram society within ISKCON, then we cannot reject it as something extrinsic, because the order of the spiritual master is never external to pure bhakti. I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
Attempts to date,
to implement Varnashram have by and large failed, including Gurukula. And the reason is because the concept, the seed, the Sambandha Gyan was not fully or maturely formulated in the minds of those who were trying to apply it without real comprehension. We have to assimilate the thing in theory first, then we can begin to hope of applying it. Now, that was interesting enough, but then immediately after the question that, I mean, he answered the question in that very simple manner. It was almost a glib answer, but the biggest book distributor in the temple then raised his hand and said, I've been distributing these books for 30 years, and I know how people are reacting to them because they tell me. And he said, people read these books, and when they do read the books, they see a difference between the way that our society is structured and the way the society is ideally described in these books. And I'm talking about Sankirtan. I'm talking about book distribution. It's a problem. So, you know, that's something that we have to deal with, I think. And, you know, if we don't want to be vulnerable to accusations of hypocrisy, we've got to really think about this very deeply, and we've got to, more than think about it, we've got to do something about it. As you mentioned, Bhakti Raghava Swami is one stalwart preacher in this mode. I mean, it's not a high-profile position. He's not a big racy guru with thousands of followers or infinite money. But what he's doing is so central to sustaining the mission of Krishna consciousness. If you'll recall, one of the last instructions that Prabhupada gave also was to at least maintain what he had left us with. And in many cases, that has not been done. Remember the definition I've given already, according to the dhatu of the word dharma, to sustain. It is, if we want to maintain preaching, the mission of Sankirtan in Lord Chaitanya's movement has two very important wings. You know, kind of like we say two tracks on the railroad. So one of them is propagation, of course, and the other one is preservation. I was in Chennai and spoke to a Sri Vaishnava friend, a friend of a friend who is a Sri Vaishnava, very educated gentleman who was an astrologer and you know, he was quite conversant with all philosophies, including Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. And the topic got around to ISKCON eventually, and so he gave his opinion, and he said, in my circles, he said, the general conception is that ISKCON is very good at propagation and at organization, but we don't have anything to learn from them on a social level. That's a problem. And I think that Prabhupada, even though it does deal with the Pravriti Marg to some degree, you know, Prabhupada did give us instructions about this. And it would seem that he was, in all seriousness, expected us to follow them. So this is an area, in general, I think, where a lot more work has to be done. And Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj has done a lot in terms of helping us to at least conceptualize what's going on here from a theoretical perspective, because he's brahminical by nature. Bhakti Raghava Swami has a more kind of hands-on, practical approach, which is also welcome, because Prabhupada did emphasize the economic and especially the agrarian aspects that a sustainable society entails. That's very important as well. So these are some things that I hope that's satisfactory. Yes, Prabhu?
Further to that point.
Give him the microphone.
Further to this point, how does that manifest individually and collectively?
Well, you know, collectively, to look for a collective manifestation, I think, really requires that there's a consensus about the concept of what dharma means. I mean, that's where we need to begin, in my opinion. I would agree with Vijaya Purna Maharaj that, you know, we've got to really very, and Gopi Paranadana Prabhu, I know also, he has also stated clearly that, you know, what we need to do is really go through all of Srila Prabhupada's instructions very, very carefully and make sure that we really understand them. So that that's the first step, I think. I mean, without that, you really can't, you know, I mean, collective, you know, to congeal any sort of action plan, it really requires enough consensus about what dharma means to, you know, to begin to talk on a practical level. So I would say that's the first step. And that's probably all we need to worry about for now, I think. Please.
I think the very idea that the Prabhupada gave me a single sentence that he took from Gandhi is simple and in my thinking.
Yeah.
So there's so much in there. I went to see Bhakti Rama's project last year, and I was very impressed because they have the center, it's the most divine atmosphere. Mm. The teacher is sitting under a tree with the student, there's no book, there's no writing, simply hearing. Mm. So that very idea of just hearing without writing, without recording, that is very powerful in this
hearing.
Idea of Praviti Mar. But what Mar, if you talk about some road I should be walking, and this is not a road filled with ritual, because this whole story is about Narada Muni talking to the king against this karma conduct. You have to remember the beginning of the story. It's against karma conduct. Because this king's son is also standing in war for hundreds of thousands of years. So he's rejecting this. So we should understand the whole, this is the intelligence, the world of intelligence trying to seduce the king.
Yeah.
And the irony, there's so much irony in this last line. All this material happens happy.
It's ironic.
So the irony, so we have to see the irony here.
Yeah, the real thing.
So the real thing is actually everything is above the law of regulation, ultimately. So the Praviti Mar is not as outlined with rules and regulations, but it is transcendental. It's, if we say, vyakta, avyakta, and then that those are the two manifest among all sanatana. And the sanatana is the path of this nivriti mark, not even vyakta or avyakta.
Mm.
Very important to understand the sri
levels. I mean, statistically, there's one verse that Srila Prabhupada spoke from more often than any other verse in any of his books. Does anyone know what it is? It's in Bhagavad Gita chapter 7. Yathagnyasati tatsrinamo, just here, that verse. That is the one Bhagavad Gita verse that Prabhupada spoke from more often than any other verse. That's really what we need to do. This
can
is
you see the verse?
Yeah, yeah. Here, I'll read it. Chapter 7. Maya Saktamana Partha Yogam Yunjan Mad Ashleha. Asamshayam samagram man yathagnyasasi tatshrinamo. The Supreme Personality of God has said, now hear, O son of Pritha, how, by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. The significant line here is yathagnyasasi tatshrinamo. As much as you're interested, hear. Just hear.
And the hearing is actually contrast to seeing.
Yeah.
Because the sense of seeing is very, very prominent, but it is misleading. There's a sense of hearing. I was just reading a devotee who was commenting on that, some professor did the research, and she said, nowadays the children are almost incapable of hearing. You see, everybody's looking like this.
Yeah.
So, and that's why the education, the intelligence of the whole nation is going down, because no longer is they hear or to speak of memorization. Memorization is so powerful. This is like an antiseptic. So as soon as we start memorizing, we have to fully focus. Then the mind becomes clear. There's no problem.
I saw one passage in which Prabhupada is emphasizing the importance of learning shlokas from Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. He said this is part of Vishnu Smaranam. Smaranam means memorization. Vishnu Smaranam?
Yes.
Memorization. Smaranam means memorizing. Okay, it's getting late, so I think we need to go now.
Yeah, but I remember my son, he went to the Vrindavan Gurukula for 2-3 years. And he came back because I was not there, so mommy did not have his car for me to live here. He was missing his family. So when he came back, he knew all the Bhagavad Gita in memory.
Yeah.
And he was inside the third candle. Part of the Bhagavad Gita in memory was analyzed.
thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.